The second production in this year's Globe season, the season of star-crossed lovers, is an all-female Much Ado About Nothing. An original practices production, the word authentic is frowned upon at the Globe. It has costumes, music and dance, such as an audience might have experienced in Shakespeare's day. But in one obvious way, of course, it is far from the original in this sense. All female casts were unheard of in England until the mid-1660s, and no women were permitted to appear on stage at all when Much Ado was written in 1598. Artistic director Mark Rylance maintains that the Globe is a place for experiment, and of course modern actresses have complained in the past about being excluded from all male productions. Last year there were successful all-women productions of Richard III with a fierce but funny Catherine Hunter in the title role, and A Taming of the Shrew with Janet McTeer as Petruchio vigorously sending up laddish behaviour. Set in Messina in Sicily, the action of Much Ado begins with the return of soldiers in triumph from war. Two love stories ensue between the apparently reluctant Beatrice and Benedick, and between Beatrice's innocent cousin Hero and Claudio, who is misled by the jealous Don John into thinking her unfaithful and rejects her. All is resolved with the help of a comic watch led by a master constable, Dogberry, who is incapable of uttering a malapropism-free sentence. The main interest must be in the witty, verbal duelling of Beatrice and Benedick, whose unacknowledged attraction provides amusement both for their friends, who trick them into admitting their mutual love, and the audience. Beatrice is played by Yolanda Vasquez, something of a Globe veteran. Among other parts, she was Queen Elizabeth in Richard III and Hortensio in The Taming of the Shrew last year. Benedick is comedian and impro star Josie Lawrence, a Globe newcomer. This is director Tamara Harvey's first production at the Globe, although she has assisted here on a number of others, including Richard II and Twelfth Night. My name is Heather Neal, and with me to discuss Much Ado are Carol Waddis, Kate Bassett, and David Benedict. First of all, David, are there any advantages to playing this with an all-female cast?
In this production, absolutely not. I think you might be able to do Much Ado with a single gender cast, but I doubt it. I think most people assume that this is a play about couples, that you have Beatrice and Benedict, Hero and Claudio, and various other compilations of couples. But in fact, I think this is a play about men versus women, and it actually blurs everything if you don't have that distinction. I think if you had a really brilliant director that completely understood every single moment of this play, you might be able to do it with a single gender cast. But Tamara Harvey, for my money, doesn't understand this play at all.
That's quite harsh criticism, but Carol, what did you think? Did you think there was anything to be gained?
I'm afraid I agree with everything that David has just said. This was a huge disappointment. I think there are very good reasons, considering that the Globe have done so many single-sex productions, all-male productions, there is a tenuous, I suppose, kind of justification for having all-female productions. At least it gives actresses, female actors, a chance to actually act in Shakespeare, or to act more in Shakespeare. But in this particular instance, the greatest sin of this production, and I quite enjoyed, in fact, I thoroughly enjoyed Janet McTeer last year. I thought The Shrew had a great deal kind of going for it. But the greatest sin of Tamara's production, which is very sad because I saw her production of Tennessee Williams' premiere of, I think, Something Cloudy, Something
Clear
at the Finborough about 6 or 7 months ago, which was just lovely, a really lovely production. This was so boring, and what was desperately missing was the swagger. As David has just said, if you're going to make anything of this production, which is full of light and full of darkness, you've got to have that contrast going. And there was no contrast. This was played for all the hair. I mean, the women playing the men were festooned in beards. Now, I have no objection to women being festooned in beards. It's very interesting that lesbian feminists about 6 or 7 years ago were experimenting in this very seriously down at the ICA and the Drill Hall. So, and they were, you know, they were really trying to kind of make serious explorations about this. So I have no objection to that. But it was played so straight. It was so boring.
Kate, have you got anything to say that might...
I'm trying to rustle up something. Essentially, I could rant. I actually think Mark Rylance has a very kind of wayward policy in terms of directors, and sometimes it's fantastic and sometimes it's awful, and I don't really think it's such a major theatre now. I don't think we need to be doing productions there with bad directing. And unfortunately I didn't see Something Cloudy, Something Clear, so I don't know, but it seemed to me that she didn't do much in terms of directing at all. And actually, I also thought Josie Lawrence was really awful. I mean, amazingly awful. She's played leading roles at the RSC. She's an improviser from the Comedy Store. She was incredibly unfunny. And she was doing this kind of deepened voice with a Brummy accent that came and went. I mean, I wouldn't have given her the part in a school play.
She didn't seem to understand it at all, did she?
It was extraordinary. And Janet McTeer was wonderful.
Fantastic.
I wondered, in fact, if they were deliberately trying to avoid what they'd done last year, the very overplayed, outrageous, thigh-slapping, we're going to be men in your face. They were so not doing that they actually didn't make them into men at all.
Well, I tell you, I thought two people in it were good, not the leading roles. I thought Penelope Beaumont as the father of
Leonardo
was really good when he was distressed and turned on his daughter, and there was an extraordinary intensity of grief and rage. And actually, I thought Don John wasn't bad. Rachel Sanders.
I would also say that the most difficult, worst, impossible role in this play is Dogberry, who, you know, famously he hath written me down, I am an ass. Comedy policeman without comedy, except that Sarah Woodward made it work. I thought it was an astonishing piece of work. In a production as lamentable as this, she gathered her forces together, she didn't overplay it, it was fantastically consistent, and she was funny. And I also thought that, particularly again within this production that didn't understand that there's a relationship between Don Pedro and Claudio, that's why the Claudio hero love scenes seem to be underwritten. It's because he's much more interested in being with men. The director didn't seem to recognise that that's referred to in the text. So poor Don Pedro is absolutely marooned. And for Belinda Davison to give Don Pedro the amount of depth that she gave him in a production that didn't understand what her character was for was extraordinary.
I thought one of the other kind of strong things, if one can say that, of this production was that it brought out the cruelty. Because of the very strong Leonardo, I did think that what came over was the sudden fickleness of these male characters, that they see something, that seeing is believing. And I thought that that came over quite strongly in the production.
And actually it did make you think about, across the board, about other Shakespeare plays where daughters are turned on, or men turn on their nearest and dearest women.
Instantly.
Very rapidly and disturbingly. Yes.
But it would have been all that much stronger if this had inhabited an emotional range larger from that between sort of volume 4 and volume 5. I mean, this is, for me, the great comedy. I know it's not regarded as such, but this has got fantastic pain and fantastic joy. I've only ever seen a whole play work once, which was in a production by Chibai Jal, a Declan Donald's production, which wasn't even that strongly cast in some roles, but you didn't care, because the intelligence of the production gave you all the range of the show. This had no range, and Leonardo's pain, which I agree was well illustrated, just seemed to me to be in a vacuum. Act 4, Scene 1, the desecration of the marriage scene and the kill Claudio scene, is one of the finest scenes of the whole of Shakespeare, and it just went for nothing.
I was going to ask you about kill Claudio, because the night I was there was a huge laugh on that line.
That's really interesting, though. I've seen that before, and I think that's very interesting about the play. I never know why people laugh, but I've seen it happen before.
Embarrassment. I think
Silence and stunned.
Well, I think it absolutely is one of those moments where you understand what a director is doing with a play on a line like that.
Yes,
Chekhov is
exactly
full of lines like that. And Kill Claudio is one of those moments, because you can play I Want to Kill Claudio, at which point Benedict can either go, don't be so absurd, oh, you're serious. There are hundreds of ways to play that. And this just seemed to be uncertain as to what it was doing, because there was no relationship between Beatrice and Benedict, so they couldn't play that moment. That seemed to be the besetting scene. There's no relationship on the stage.
Can we talk a bit about it being on the Globe stage? Did that help or hinder? I mean, the fact that there's a relationship with the audience, which you don't get in other theatres, did that help the comedy?
I thought they handled it quite badly. I mean, I often think that's one of the joys of the Globe, that they discover these moments where they turn to the pit. and interact with them, and I thought it was very forced and rather feeble.
But the night I was there, I mean, the audience were just magnificent. I mean, if you go to the Globe, you go for the audience, because they are so... quite often, you know, in the first kind of 20 minutes, you get abuse. I mean, I was there for the Romeo and Juliet opening night, and for whatever reason, the groundlings were amazingly rowdy, and one wondered if the actors were actually, like in Shakespearean times, were actually going to be able to control them. And then within half an hour, that audience had kind of quietened down. And they are so generous, the audience, and they listen so attentively. They are fantastic.
I mean, strangely, I didn't hate this as much as it sounds because of that. I actually really always enjoy going to the Globe, in spite of the dodginess of this production.
I mean, the miracle of Much Is About Nothing is the plot is so good. It's such a strong piece of writing, that the gulling scenes, that it just builds up head of steam. You get into Act Two and the plot's up and running, and my God, it works. And there was, you know, there was a degree of laughter the night I was there. But I did think that really what was astonishing is that despite the fact that Tamara Harvey has assisted, as you say, on several productions there, she doesn't seem to have worked out the hot spots on that stage. Traditionally, the hottest point of the stage is upstage centre. Here at the Globe, it's downstage centre, or in fact right down by the pillars, where you absolutely can work with an audience. But nobody seemed to be doing that. She stages a lot of Benedict stuff way upstage. All the gulling scenes, they're trapped under a bit of set right up against the back wall. It robs a lot of scenes of dynamism. It must be said that when Josie Lawrence had her soliloquy, which I think is in Act 4, and she was playing that down front, suddenly her performance came alive. But you suddenly went, yeah, that's because that's what you're really good at. You're a fantastic performer, but trapped in this production, you seem unable to act.
Just going back to the swagger question, I also think it's interesting that Mark Rylance was a very famous and fantastic Benedict himself, and what was fantastic about the way he played it was it wasn't swaggering. He was this sort of sweet but funny, ridiculous loser, rather than a sort of swaggering soldier.
I think, Kate, I mean, in my lifetime, there have been two major roles, two major performances that I can recall, and productions. One of them was that John Barton production for the RSC, which was played middle-aged, Judi Dench and Donald Sinden. And the way that that slightly over-the-hill couple came together had tears. One had tears pouring. I mean, it was so beautiful. And the other one was the recent one with Nicholas
Leprevo
and Harriet Walter.
Yes.
And again, I thought that Greg Doran got the balance between light and shade and heart-stopping and humour absolutely right.
I do think it's very difficult to get that kind of subtlety on the Globe stage, in fact. I mean, to present these people as possibly dysfunctional people who face a lifetime of loneliness if something doesn't go right for them, that isn't going to be there, is it? They've just got to get the lines out.
You have to work out the relationships. You have to work out what is going on in the scene, what the dynamics of the scene are. Mm. And I felt as if all night long people did lines at me, but I didn't know why. They might have known what they meant. They probably did loads of textual work. They knew what they were saying, why they were saying it, and where the scene was going, where the dynamism was. I have no idea.
Before we finish, we must say something about the original practices part of the production, because as you say, the audience always does seem to enjoy itself there, and I think that's not least because of the terrific jig you always end up with at the end. So anyone got anything to say, Carol, about the dance, the music, or the costumes?
Love the dance every single time. You're absolutely right, we all kind of go away, and the audience just love it when they, no matter how dark the play has been, no matter who's been murdered, they all come on and do that jig, and it absolutely takes the audience away. The costumes, somebody needs to take Mark Rylance on one side and say, the costumes are becoming an abomination.
It looked like Sale Day at Laura Ashley.
They are over-fussy, over-elaborate, horrible.
These endless stripes and colours all at war with one another that didn't seem to do anything for any of the characters. You know, Yolanda Vasquez looked like she was trapped inside a sofa. I mean, what was going on?
The last production as well, it's the same. Something has got completely out of control.
I'd be interested to know what the actual properties of the Globe were. From my feeling, I don't think they had that many amazing costumes. I mean, I think they had sort of a few really expensive ones, but I might be wrong. But the feeling I have, you know, you look at the programme, and the list of people who work on costumes, there's two people doing stockings, there's one person doing buttons, there's one person, and this is without the 17 tailors and seamstresses.
They work 70 hours a week.
I'm kind of thrilled that someone is exploring and really doing it. But firstly, they do look upholstered, and secondly, if you had the acting to match the fabric, that would be fine. Mm. But at the moment, it looks like a Victoria and Albert fashion parade.
You know, what does it gain you if you are authentic to? I'm sure that this has been researched to the ends of the earth as to exactly what Tudor costume practice was from what we know. But actually, that belongs in a museum. It doesn't seem to add anything to a living theatre.
What about the music? Can we say something nice about it?
Perfectly fine.
I actually think there were some all right actresses getting lost in this production. Mm. And some of them shining through.
Anouk Bomo as Claudio had some subtlety in her performance.
I thought it was the worst Claudio I've ever seen.
I thought it was a terrible Claudio. I thought Maria Gale might turn up elsewhere, who was Hero. I thought she brought
they
out
do
a sort of vulnerability.
I thought she was trapped. Mm.
Well, I'm afraid that's not a very happy note on which to end, but there's no more to say, I'm afraid.
Much to do about nothing.
Very much.
Living up to its title.
Thank you, Carol Waddis, Kate Bassett and David Benedict.